there's still a need for leadership to provide a vision, a direction, and a guidance on what is it that we're trying to achieve and what is there at the end of the journey. Now, unless somebody steps in and provides that vision, you just don't know what you're aiming at. And quite often, this is one of the key reasons I see when I land into digital transformation initiatives that are struggling or have already failed.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your co-host Jonathan Donald, founder of the change management firm Invert Ventures, and your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
On today's episode, we will discuss effective projects with Mr. Ganapathy Iyer. Mr. Iyer is an author, speaker, and project facilitator. He's spent years across many countries helping organizations structure, deliver, and sometimes recover technology-enabled transformation projects. Mr. Iyer is focused on education and teaching organizations how to be able to create and sustain vibrant, motivating, and safe project teams that have great fun working together and deliver some amazing outcomes. Ganapathy is also the author of Reboot, How to Put Joy Back into Troubled Technology Projects. He's a certified PMP project management professional and a certified Scrum Master. Jack, I'm really excited to have Ganapathy on the show. Here's another case of our podcast connecting professionals in this space, not just across land masses, but oceans too.
Absolutely. I think our listeners are in for a delightful conversation here. I'm really looking forward to this. As you'd mentioned, Jonathan, Ganapathy loves to share. He has a passion for digital transformation project management. Really looking forward to his insight. So today, Ganapathy will share with us the definition of successful digital transformation projects, why digital transformation projects fail, how to manage project burnout, effective decision-making, project sponsorship, data migration management, and making proper decisions effectively. And obviously, all of those are pretty important parts to success. So let's get started. So Jonathan, as you'd mentioned, joining us from Auckland, New Zealand, Ganapathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, Jack. Kia ora from Auckland, New Zealand, or as we call it, Aotearoa out here. First of all, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate being able to talk to people on the other side of the world, and I'm sure this wouldn't have been possible without technology and all the social media that we've got out here in the world. How privileged are we to have them?
Yeah, and we are privileged as well to have you today, Ganapathy, that's for sure. So thank you again.
And thank you for spending your time with us. I know the time difference can be really challenging. And so as we're getting started here, Ganapathy, I always like to ask our listener, or for our listener's sake and for my own, give us an introduction to you. What's behind the bio? What do you think our listeners would really love to know about you in a personal context?
So I'm a project advisor. That's what I am at the core of what I do. I love helping leaders and teams create vibrant and thriving teams that can deliver complex technology-enabled transformations. I'm an electrical engineer by qualification. I don't do much of electrical engineering, except changing bulbs. And my mom still believes that an electrical engineer should be able to change bulbs, and that's what her definition is. So that's what I do. I help organizations conceptualize, structure, deliver, and transition technology-enabled transformations, especially business application projects, because these can be extremely complex, long-winded, and significantly shifting the way organizations and their people work. So my job is to help make it as simpler, as effective, and as joyous as possible for organizations to go through the journey. I worked with KPMG for a number of years across countries, helping organizations through their ERP, CRM, and master data management implementations across a number of sectors, including telecommunications, agrochemicals, manufacturing, media, retail, so on and so forth. Since 2013, I'm based out of New Zealand. And after a stint of freelance project management last year, I started my own practice focusing on educating and helping clients go through these kind of projects without the pain that we've come to associate it with. So that's about me.
Fantastic.
So Ganapathy, we're here today because of your expertise in digital transformation. And so I think to set the tone here, specifically, how would you define a successful digital transformation project?
It's an interesting question. There are so many definitions, and definitely technology has a part to do with it. But the way I look at it is everything we do is to benefit someone. And my definition of a successful digital transformation comes from essentially the person or the set of people we're trying to create this for. And a digital transformation for me is how do you use technology and the tools available to you to, one, enhance the connection, and second, by virtue of that, enhance the experience that you want to give to your customer. Now, this could be an end user or an end customer, or it could be your internal customer. The moment you start treating this as a customer relationship and about enhancing the experience that you want your customer to get, I think the power in the digital transformation becomes far more effective than trying to treat it as an initiative where you're implementing few technologies and hoping things will be better.
Well said, Ganapathy. I appreciate that. That's a really good idea and definition of success, and actually some great pointers on what it takes to be successful.
Ganapathy, we're going to continue on that theme. I'm going to just share a couple of things from your website for our listeners. Projects are channels organizations use to make significant shifts for themselves, their people, and their customers. Technology-enabled projects are a big chunk of these. Yet I see regular occurrence of troubled projects which cause significant grief to everyone involved and with no end in sight. And of course, it costs a lot of time and a lot of money. End quote. Ganapathy, I really love this insight that you're showing. And transformations, whether they're digital transformations, ERP or others, there's a well-documented high percentage of failure in a lot of these projects. So when you're looking at this from your perspective, what are the main influences that cause these projects to fail? And is it because leaders and those leaders are doing something or not doing something?
This is a question that I'm sure every organization and the leadership within the organization face when embarking on these sort of initiatives. Now, for me, I look at it like an air crash. Now, if you look at an air crash, it is never because of one single reason. It's always a series of events that happen over a period of time that cascade to create a situation that is catastrophic. For me, failed digital transformation initiatives are like an air crash from which you haven't recovered. There are a number of things, and there are a few that I'd like to dwell upon here and reflect really. The first one is people who care. It's about the leadership. And much as there is a talk about self-organizing teams and, you know, people driving the agenda, there's still a need for leadership to provide a vision, a direction, and a guidance on what is it that we're trying to achieve and what is there at the end of the journey. Now, unless somebody steps in and provides that vision, you just don't know what you're aiming at. And quite often, this is one of the key reasons I see when I land into digital transformation initiatives that are struggling or have already failed. And for me, that starts with very good sponsorship. Somebody who has to be invested in the outcomes of the transformation, and somebody who can then take that vision and get other people to buy in, make sure there are enough people and capacity within those people to support these initiatives. The second one I see is having clear end in sight. Now, I hear a lot of talk around saying, you know, digital transformation is an ongoing journey, and sure it is. But look at this pandemic, right? All of us want to know a date when we would be set free. And sure, that date might move, that date might have its challenges, but nobody wants to keep toiling without an end in sight. It's almost like you're sailing in the big ocean without knowing when the next port or the next piece of land is going to come your way. Not many people can stay motivated with that kind of an outlook. These are the two main drivers that I see, the leadership and the vision. A third one, which I look at, is really a journey that's visible. If you are traveling from Auckland to the US, sure, you don't need to know every single street that you're going to pass. But at some point, you need to know what are the waypoints that you will pass. Because people are reinforced by milestones that they achieve. Every time I can see that I've moved closer to what my destination is, it's easier for people to stay motivated. And it's easier for people to exert themselves in a manner that is effective. Without a clear end and steps in between, people lose momentum. And with digital transformation initiatives, the moment you lose momentum, the moment you lose energy, you are running uphill against a steep hill from which recovery becomes extremely difficult.
Kinepathy, that was well said. And, you know, and I like what you said, that it's really often failure is really around a series of events that cause that failure, right? There may be some influences that are more significant than others, I mean, surely. But often there's a lot of influences that, if mismanaged, lead to failure. And what I heard you say, really, you'd mentioned many things. And I think that lack of these influences have a significant impact on failure. And so, for example, just to reiterate for our listeners, I heard you say people who care, vision, sponsorship, stakeholder investment, leadership, buy-in, clear objectives, clear results, clear scope, internal organizational motivation, clear visibility or progress, reinforcement, and momentum. And those are often influences that perhaps aren't given enough attention. But I agree, it's those combination of things often are certainly contribute to failure because they have a significant impact.
Yes, they do. And one more thing, which especially on digital transformation initiatives, is worth noting. The people who are involved in driving this from within organizations do not do this for a living. Sure, consulting organizations and implementation partners do this for a living. But if you look at a CFO or a middle management person who's leading teams and, let's say, delivering sales and services to customers, it's very unlikely they go through a digital transformation initiative daily in their lives. For them, this is an event which is typically a one-time event. So without taking care of all of these aspects, including the engagement, giving them a clear objective and the journey and how progress and outcomes look like, it's very difficult for them to visualize. They know what their existing problems are. They just don't know what good looks like.
Great point. That's true. And, you know, a lot of times, I guess what I often say to summarize that statement, Ganepathy, is just like life in general, I think it's a truism that people know what they know what they don't know, but they don't know what they don't know as well. And sometimes without that experience and that understanding, it's the they don't know what they don't know sometimes is a major influence, and that can be a problem. So, Ganepathy, you share on your website that, and I'm going to share a quote with our listeners, and I'm not going to paraphrase because I want to make sure the idea is clear to our listeners, but you share, quote, "Projects are intended to spur growth for all of their constituents, be it individuals, teams, or organizations. Technology projects form a sizable portion of organizational project portfolios. Yet, when they get into trouble, they can cause severe pain, some of the extent of threatening existence of organizations themselves. Reboot provides a practical, robust, and guided framework to help you recover a troubled technology project." And for our listeners, Reboot is the name of Ganepathy's book. So Ganepathy, what inspired your book, Reboot?
Seems like a long time ago that I started writing this book. What inspired me was essentially the elephant in the room. An elephant which people can see growing, but yet they don't fully grasp the impact of it till it's too late. And the key reason I wrote this book is the people who are involved with a troubled initiative are under extreme stress. Now, sure, I compare failing projects to air crashes, and I understand it might not be as catastrophic as losing lives, but the impact on people, especially their confidence, their mental health, their ability to live life, can be significant while dealing with these kind of projects. And more so if you're in a government kind of setup. Even in corporate organizations, there's extreme pressure because end of the day, all these projects are intended to either drive profitability, drive revenue, or make your operations more efficient in a manner that enhances end value for your stakeholders. In government, this becomes even more difficult because there's also the added scrutiny because you are using public taxpayers' money to fund some of these projects. And my intention here, through all the experiences that I had, was to actually provide a simplified guide to help people understand what's going on in a troubled project. How do they diagnose and get hold of the exact reasons why things aren't going the way they were planned, and then recover them? Now, I understand there are a lot of books that talk about it, and there are a lot of surveys and research that talks about what can be done, but I found a lot of them to be fairly generic and full of jargon. And my attempt was, can I produce something that would be simple enough for people to understand, especially people who do not do this for a living? And if this could help them recover some of their projects and get their peace of mind back, I think that was the intention that inspired me to write this book.
Ganapathy, I get a real sense in your answer that it's more than just the technology and the project, that there's a deep care in you for them as people and the human side of what these transformations really take. And I just want to honor you for pointing that out, because I think the human side of the digital transformation is often the piece that falls the first.
It's amazing, isn't it? Even technology is implemented by humans. We quite easily forget that in the rush to implement technology and have digital transformations enabled, it's convenient and sometimes subconsciously easy to forget what people go through in these kind of initiatives.
Yeah. And I want to take that as we go to our next area. So we've seen this, and I'm going to share a bit that we see in large ERP and certainly in most transformations that change burnout, or just burnout, is a real thing. And sometimes a core group of small stakeholders can end up taking the bulk of the work if it's a core requirement for implementation of a ton of different projects. And you talk about this in one of your blogs, where you state crazy work hours, weekends, turning up to meetings unprepared, or sometimes falling behind on commitments they've already made and expressed. Yet they continue persisting to a point where it's often too late, often with disastrous consequences for everyone, including themselves. So what I'm really curious about here is, how can you recognize it as a leader and as someone in an organization? And then once we recognize it, how can we help leaders and the people involved who have that decision power to see it? And then what do we do?
Yeah, you're right, Jonathan. This is an extremely common scenario in a lot of organizations across the world. And I'll probably start with, what could you do to prevent this in the first place? Before we come to what could you do with these people who are really at risk with this kind of a situation. The first thing that I often see a lot of organizations doing is, in the rush to deliver things on time, on budget, and to the required level of quality, people take on far too much than what they realistically can. And I haven't seen too many organizations prioritize what projects they start effectively, asking a question whether we have enough capacity within our organization to support these projects. Now, what happens is, with almost every digital transformation initiative, it's but natural that you will have a whole lot of external organizations helping you out. And that's perfectly valid. You need these specialized skills and experience to help you navigate your journey towards a digitally enabled enterprise. What people do not look at is, do they have the people within the organization to support this? And we briefly touched upon the leadership and the sponsorship earlier in this episode. But the next step is the people who actually contribute to designing what the future looks like. Now, what often happens is these people are the top performers within the organization in an operational sense. So these are people who, in some sense, are almost heroic in the way they keep the existing organization running with its combination of falling systems, processes, and gaps. So what people do is they pick these people, they nominate them as business leads or subject matter experts, or in the agile world, product owners. And it's almost like somebody's dressed you up to look something different. And while these people are great at what they do, they don't necessarily are equipped with everything that's needed to design a future that they do not know how it looks like. And what happens is these people end up stretching themselves to such an extent that they become the bottleneck. It becomes so bad that you have all these vendor organizations following up on them to make decisions, and they do not have enough support within the organization. This spiral continues to an extent where it just becomes impossible for them to deal with it. I have seen so many people being burnt out or completely lose their confidence by virtue of this cycle, which they just don't know they're being sucked into. So that for me is something that people can actually prevent if they're a bit more conscious on what projects they kick off and whether they have capacity to deal with. So that's one aspect of preventing it. Now, let's say you've gone into this and at some point you realize that there are people within your organization who are being burnt out. There are a few things that I, based on experience, try with these people. The first one is conversations. Now, I see an urge to go and apply some sophisticated methods and, you know, roadmaps and those kind of things. But for me, it starts with conversations. Pick up the phone, have a one-on-one with this person, appreciate and acknowledge the effort they're putting in and the difference they're making for the organization through their contributions. And then listen, understand where they need support. Quite often, these people do know what's bothering them. They're just not able to articulate or come out and express it openly. Giving them that space and creating that environment where they can come out and talk about it, I think makes a far bigger difference than people imagine it could. The second one is breaks. Now, it's very easy to spot these people being continuously busy, back-to-back meetings, working weekends. You can see them firing emails through the weekend. You can see them responding to emails after hours. I think as a leader, if you can sit down with these people and encourage them to actively take breaks, it's quite important. Now, this also has relevance to how digital transformation projects turn out in the end. Because end of the day, there's no set right or wrong out here. It's your judgment on what's appropriate and relevant for your organization and your customers. Now, to arrive at those kind of outcomes, you need thinking time. And if you're going to be completely busy in meetings and responding to emails and reviewing documents all the time, where's thinking? You just don't have time for any of that. So encouraging them to take the break and then come back and attack things is really helpful. The third one is support. Now, this is something I see so often that I no longer find it funny. Every time you express to a leadership team saying, hey, this person needs support, the common retort I get is, but there isn't anyone in the organization who understands more than what this person does. Or it's going to take far too much time to train somebody else. We might as well get this done with this person. And my response is, sure, it will take more time to train somebody, but if you don't start, you're not going to get anywhere. So why not start? Why don't you, you know, allocate somebody from the team and just let them shadow it? Even simple things like organizing meetings or taking notes, you know, by doing this, somebody can actually build up support for this person. And without building out support, there's no way you're going to help them. Sure, you can talk to them and say, we care for you. But beyond that, you know, unless you have some meaningful actions, it's not going to help them. There are two others I also talk about. One is coaching. And often these people have been told to just get on and do the work. They know no better because they don't have the time to think. By offering someone who could work with them, help them ask the right questions. And that's what a good coach does. A good coach helps you ask the right and relevant questions that will then help you solve whatever problems you're facing. I have never seen organizations actively invest in coaching initiative for these kind of people. And come to think of it, if these are the people who are designing the future of what your organization would look like and the way it would deliver goods and services to customers, you really need these people at their peak. And by just chucking them into the deep, you're not making things better for anyone. And finally, I think if not anything, offer them support in prioritizing what they should be focusing on. When somebody is drowning in the detail, they just can't see the difference between what's important and what's not. If you can help them prioritize it and take away a few things and either put them on hold for some time or ask someone else to help with it, that's going to make a big difference by itself. So there are a number of other techniques and methods to do it. But at the heart of it is to initiate a conversation, listen, and then provide the support.
I want to highlight for all our listeners, I think you just gave a, from my perspective, a condensed masterclass. And I wouldn't call that project management. I would call that process leadership. And the idea of using conversations, breaks, offering them to support in whatever way, coaching, recognizing who they are as people, and prioritization of what they're doing can really help organizations move past this, as you said, the rush to deliver on time and budget that people naturally take on, and all the consultants and the external help to really look at in their organization and in themselves, what capacity, time, and effort do they have to do this work? And is it enough? And I really loved how you included both perspectives there. So thank you.
Yeah, I agree, Jonathan. That was well said. We got a masterclass in about 5-6 minutes. Really, really good insight. And I think, Ganapathy, your answer clearly comes from experience and a place of great reflection. So that's really great. That was insightful. Ganapathy, you stated on one of your blogs that, quote, making decisions is great, making it easier to implement is better, end quote. Can you elaborate for our listeners and can you share any experience or insight in regards to practical tips in which to accomplish that?
Sure. The genesis for that blog was essentially I hear a lot of noise and chatter about the slow speed of decision making in organizations. While that's still true, I believe there's something more than that. You know, all of us make New Year resolutions, and yet it's proven that beyond the first 3 weeks in January, very few resolutions actually stick. Now, there's a key reason why that happens. It's because we make it far too difficult for ourselves to follow through on the decisions. I'll give you an example. I recently bought a bag of sugar from the supermarket, and it had a sticker on it which said, "We will donate $1 to a charity for every packet that you purchase." Such a noble cause. And it wasn't costing me anything. I bought the bag of sugar and I assumed they would pay $1 to the charity. Now, when I finished emptying the sugar into a bottle, I just read the packaging again. And beneath that, it made a statement saying, "We will do it if you scan a particular barcode and you then enter a particular code which is on the packet. At that point in time, we will make the donation." Do you see how much of friction there is in between making a decision and the action flowing from it? So for me, the whole thinking is, if you make a decision, what can you do to make it easy for the person to follow through? And the more you think of it, if an action is not easy enough to implement following a decision, at some point you will come back again and have the same conversation and have the same discussion and wonder, you know, what happened since you made the last decision.
Ganapathy, I want to move to another topic, but it's really related to a lot of this. So in your blog, you're talking about the roundabout rider in decision-making. And I really love this because I think one of the things that is not clear in transformations digital or otherwise, is decision making, structure, process, and people. So in your blog, you quote a notion that for those of us who have been in the PM field, so project management field, long enough to recognize in regards to decision making, people may be, as you say, ask questions, they provide advice, they sympathize, and yet there is no decision. And that no decision blocks action and causes stress. And sometimes they don't realize that the lack of a decision or the lack of clarity creates this. So what can a PM do about it, and how can you help organizations see it?
Such a common scenario, isn't it, Jonathan? And I use the roundabout example just to make it visible for people reading the blog. Now, a roundabout is supposed to be out there on the roads to enable a smooth flow of traffic. But imagine somebody entering the roundabout and just circling around it, not allowing anyone to exit. Now, this is what happens when decisions don't get made and there's somebody who's circling the roundabout. Now, the first thing from a project management perspective that helps is to actually make sure who is the decision maker. For me, it starts with who is the decision maker. If you're not clear on who's the decision maker, you're just going to be singing a Bollywood pop song to somebody who loves jazz. And you think they're dancing to your music, but you just don't have any sort of connect. So making sure, and it can't get simpler than that. It's simply asking the question, who is the decision maker? And if you can't find one, then spend time finding one. The first thing, once you've done with the decision maker, the second thing is to make sure that your ask is clear. Quite so often, especially with options analysis and a number of other decision-making points, people get a lot of content, people get a lot of stuff. What they don't get is what is the ask or what is the decision that you're asking them to make. They also do not get what is the impact of making a decision and what is the impact of not making a decision. The third thing is, by when do you need the decision and what will happen if you do not get the decision by that particular time? This is what I call the illusion of communication. I think it was George Bernard Shaw who said the illusion of communication is really the fact that assuming it's done or something to that nature. The third one is, if you still find somebody circling the roundabout and not doing the things that they need to do, then as a project manager, it's up to you to call it out and tell them that they are doing this, because you do yourself no favors by not telling people when they're not doing the right thing. As a project manager, it's your responsibility. It's almost your obligation to tell people when things like this are not happening. Because by not telling them, you're not creating the awareness, you're not surfacing problems and letting time get away, which eventually will blow up. So for me, these three things, one, confirming who's the decision maker, second, making sure your ask is very clear, and the third is telling people if they're not making decisions in a straightforward manner, is the best way to get rid of this behavior.
So Ganapathy, I'm going to ask you the same question that Jonathan and I believe over almost 50 or so episodes now we've asked every guest since our very first episode. And so we're going to ask that to you as well. So as a fellow practitioner in ERP organizational change, and from, you know, someone who has seen great success and with obviously great insight and experience, I'm going to ask you this question. So, you know, we do benefit from learning from our colleagues and our friends and the practitioners as well as the researchers. How would you summarize your work, your experience, your insight? If you distill that down into a paragraph or two, what would you say to ERP organizational change practitioners in a way that you feel best describes your advice?
Sure. I'd like to borrow a few sayings or reflections from the book Finite and Infinite Games by James Cass. And as he points out, there are two games that we all play, or there are at least two games that we all play. There's a finite game, which you play with the objective of winning. And for this game, there are rules, there are disciplines that you follow. And the end result is whatever comes out at the end of the game. Now, digital transformation, if initiatives, projects are, for me, some sort of finite game that we're all playing. There are clear rules. There's a clear definition of what success looks like. And there are disciplines that each one of us within the team follow. However, for me, the gist of this conversation is on the infinite game. The infinite game is not played with the objective of winning. It's played with the objective of keeping the game going. And for me, the key thing that people take out of projects over and above the satisfaction and the fulfillment that they feel by achieving project objectives is the relationships that they create. I've had so many people who have become lifelong friends from the projects that we've worked together. For me, if I were to summarize this conversation, I would say, sure, focus on the finite games, win it, be disciplined, but in the urge to do so, do not forget the infinite game that you're playing, which is about people, connection, and relationships.
Ganapathy from Auckland, New Zealand. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Really insightful conversation. I really do appreciate your work and your reflection. And for our listeners, please be sure to check out ganapathyiyer.com. And we will include the link in Ganapathy's website in our show notes as well. Ganapathy, can you share with our listeners the best way to get in touch with you if they have any questions or need any assistance?
Sure. My website has my email ID, which is gi@ganapathyiyer.com. The email would suffice. It reaches me directly. You will get a response as soon as you reach me.
Fantastic. Well, great. Ganapathy, thank you again. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, Jack and Jonathan. Really appreciate the opportunity.
You're very welcome.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, #TheERPOCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.